Welcome to the Dearly Woven podcast. I am your host, Casey Dow. This is the podcast where we dive into the stories of shepherds and makers. So if you love all things sheep and wool, then this is the podcast for you. Hey there, everyone. This week's episode, I'm speaking with Delaney Drake of UME Homestead. After dealing with dietary health issues, Delaney assumed dairy was off limits for her. That was until her sister introduced her to sheep's milk cheese, which her stomach amazingly could handle. This led her and her husband on a journey of getting their own flock of sheep to provide milk for themselves, their community, and plans to start a delicious creamery featuring sheep's milk ice cream. So let's listen in as Delaney shares her experience this past year getting started in the sheep dairy industry and all the exciting plans they have for the future. Hey there, Delaney. Thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm really excited.
So Delaney, if you just want to start off with giving an introduction on who you are and how you and your husband got into farming.
Yes. So my name is Delaney Drake. We are UME Homestead, and that's spelled E-W-E for all you shepherds out there who know the difference. So we got started into sheep farming about 2 years ago. Our sheep actually just turned a year old, but the thought process was a little bit longer than that. So I ended up having some really bad stomach issues to where we found out there's about 80 to 90% of what most people eat, my stomach just couldn't handle. And one of those things that was included in that was dairy. I tried cow, I tried goat, and just nothing settled. And I just assumed I couldn't do dairy because, like a lot of people, if they haven't seen it in the grocery store, I just assumed those were the only two animals, I guess, you could milk. And that was my, like, oh, well, I'll just live without dairy. And then my sister introduced me to Manchego cheese, which is a primarily sheep cheese, and I realized stomach, which led me to try some sheep's milk ice cream. And it's like, once you've tried sheep's milk anything, it's really hard to go back to cow. So I looked at my husband, I was like, okay, well, let's go around and see if I could buy it from somebody. And at least in Tennessee, it's extremely hard to buy any sort of milk that's from directly from the farmer, unless they're like really high end. And I also realized that shepherds and sheep milk was really even harder to find, if not impossible, in Tennessee. So I just kind of looked at him and I said, okay, I guess we got to get our own sheep. And we visited a dairy farm down in Alabama. It's called Day Springs Dairy. They do sheep's caramel and cheeses, and they were just really great and amazing. They were about a 3-hour drive, and I just said, okay, that's it. I want sheep from here. there was a little bit of thought process behind that, but it was mostly, okay, they sell lambs, which is what we needed. We didn't have the right transportation to get large sheep, fully grown sheep. So we had to get babies, and they were like, yep, we sell babies. And here's how much. And we're like, okay, that price is about as much as we can do. So we drove down, we picked up 4 girls, 4 ewes, thinking that we weren't going to need a ram. And then realizing that like best practice is to have a closed flock. And because I figured, you know, you could just do like a ram stud service, like a horse. And that's not the case. So then we went down about a month later and got our ram, again, a baby. And then we raised them up and we got them bred. We just found out about a month ago that they are all pregnant and they're all going to have babies in a month or two. And then we'll figure out the whole milking thing. So this is our first season of milking. But what we'd like to do eventually is to provide sheep's milk ice cream to our community. Because the one that I tasted was over in California. And so it's a little far, it's a little much of a commute. So I just right. wanted to provide that to our community because I loved it so much. And, you know, ice cream is my desert island. If you could eat one thing for the rest of your life, answer, it's ice cream. And, you know, I can eat sorbet and some coconut milk ice cream, but it's just not the same. It's not that, it doesn't have that creaminess that ice cream has. And I just like, I need this in my life. So right now that we're trying to figure out the milking just for our family, but in the future, we're hoping to provide sheep's milk ice cream for our community. So for the kind of Nashville area.
And would you like to talk about the dairy sheep aspect and kind of what you have learned, you know, going into it and how it might be a little bit different if, you know, you're raising them for dairy versus meat and wool, which is a lot of other sheep farms is basically primarily what they're doing. So I'm sure the dairy sheep industry is a lot different. What have you learned through doing it?
Yeah. So one of the first things you learn is the breeds. I didn't mention that before, but there's two breeds that are dairy, that are specifically for dairy, that are available in the U.S. and that's East Frisian. And I never pronounce this one right, but I think it's Lucane. And they're from, I think, Germany and France. And they're supposed to be the primary dairy breeds that most dairies that are do sheep do those two. And so we ended up getting East Frisians and with a Gulf Coast cross. Dairy sheep tend to be a lot more sensitive than meat. And I think even some wool breeds, I think they call them the dainty ones. That's because they just, when it comes to stress, whether it's temperature or environmental, they don't handle it as well. So ours are East Frisian with a Gulf Coast cross, and the Gulf Coast is supposed to help them with the humidity and the higher temperatures. Tennessee has a bit of a more extreme weather difference than the Alabama where we got them. But as soon as they were like, we did this for heat tolerance, I was like, yeah, that, we need that, especially with the humidity.
Yeah,
I'm originally from California, so I'm like, I get the heat, but humidity is definitely its own monster.
Yes.
so it was definitely like, oh, okay. That was what I learned, is that, you know, they're a little bit more sensitive, so you have to be a little bit more careful. Feeding them is different depending on what you feed them. Their milk can taste different. I found out that they're different than goat's milk in the fact that you can freeze sheep's milk and then thaw it, and it kind of keeps its the same components, and you can still do cheese. Whereas when you try to freeze goat milk, you can't thaw it and make cheese. It's just something happens in the freezing process that makes it so it's harder to use. But sheep seem to be really versatile in the fact that it can be frozen and then thawed. And for us, that was a big deal because, you know, if you're in the dairy world, you know that you can only milk them for a certain time before you have to stop milking them in order to rebreed them so that you have fresh dairy for next year or for fresh milk for next year. So I guess that's another difference is, you know, you have to think about when you're going to breed them because you have to think about your life. This is a big one for us. It was what's going to be the easiest for you, because once those babies come and once you start milking, there is no wiggle room there. You have to milk them in the morning. You have to milk them in the afternoon. And, you know, because if you don't, that affects their milk production. Mm-hmm. And so that was definitely like, okay, well, I definitely don't want babies in the winter because it affects them. It makes lambing harder. But it also is like, I don't want to be out there in 20 degrees, trying to milk sheep. So it's like, okay, so what's going to be the most comfortable for me? We were planning to have a little one, and we had one in November. So I was like, okay, I want him to be at least a few months older before we actually are fully into milking, because I don't want to have to figure out both. So it was definitely more of like, okay, what does your life look like? And how do you plan around that? I know that with wool and with meat, that there's a little bit of that too. But because dairy is so much every morning and every afternoon, you are out there milking them, there is a little bit less wiggle room. Mm-hmm. There's, you know, you can't just have someone come over and watch your sheep, because if they don't know how to milk the sheep, it's going to be a lot harder. And stress will affect letdown. So if you stress out your sheep, you won't get as much milk. because they just won't let down their milk. So that was definitely something that was very unique to, I think, dairy sheep specifically. For their wool is, then this is something I'm learning recently because we just sheared them, is that their wool is not the nicest. It's, and when I mean the nicest, it's not like this next to skin soft. Mm-hmm. It's more like, oh, a warm blanket or some socks. And I recently kind of figured out that, you know, wool itself is so valuable at whatever, whatever quality it is, that you just need to figure out what to use it for. And so like for us, we're not specifically breeding for wool, but don't just throw that wool away because you can use it for other things. I'm finding that the Gulf Coast native sheep are pretty rare. So even having a little bit of that in with the East Frisians, you know, adds a little something to their wool.
I'm so glad that you being a, this is your first year into shepherding and you know that. That makes me so happy because, you know, so many farms out there still don't know how valuable their wool is. Mm-hmm. And I know it's a hard market to get into, you know, marketing your wool, it can be a really hard thing, but just you finding that out before you sheared for the first time, that just makes me so happy.
Well, and I think there's a lot of people, you talk to some shearers and they talk about the fact that they, you know, the farmers don't know what to do with the wool, so they just give it away. Mm-hmm. You know, or they just throw it away, which is like, right. Ugh. Yeah. That's so, yeah, painful to hear. I'm like, you're just throwing money away. I mean, even if it's just, you know, $5 or something, I'm like, that's still a lot that you can do on a farm. You know, you can buy medicine. You can. So anyway, that was just like, oh my gosh, why are you doing that? But I'm like a huge, huge researcher. So there's definitely a lot of like, okay, I need to figure out this stuff. And, you know, the fact that lamb, I don't know what the specific term is, but their for shearing is a lot softer. It's like, you know, baby hair. Yeah. Grown-up hair, and realizing, oh, okay, so this is going to be kind of a nicer wool, at least this year, because it's their first, you know, and that adds a little bit of value to it. And so it's definitely not something that we're breeding for, but it's not something that I feel is a product that is useless. Mm-hmm. And so there's definitely, like, I'm looking at it and I'm like, okay, I can sell this, all this extra stuff, what can we do with it? Can we compost it? Can we put it in the garden? Yeah. And then for meat, because we are, you know, if we can't sell our lambs for other breeding purposes, we are looking into doing meat. That's one of the things, I guess, I'll say for the dairy breeds or the dairy sheep, is that it's fun because you can get all three products from them. Not that you can't milk meat sheep and you can't milk wool sheep. You will get more from a dairy breed, but it's just nice to see that, you know, oh, you can still use it for meat, you can still use it for wool, that it's not a complete loss. It's not like, oh well, this is something that I just will shove off to the side. It's like, you know, yes, it may not be the best meat, but it's still an animal, it still will give you meat. And so that's kind of fun to see from the dairy aspect, is that yes, we're in it mostly for the liquid gold, the milk, but there's other purposes that you can use the sheep for, you know, for teaching purposes. Like I said, there's a little bit more, they're a little bit more sensitive. So it's harder to like travel with them if you're doing classes and teaching and trying to share a little bit of more about sheep, because it will affect their milk depending on what you feed them. It can make your milk taste a little funny. We actually had a neighbor feed our sheep without really asking.
Uh-oh.
They weren't in milk, so it wasn't as big a deal, but my heart sank. I was like, what are they? First of all, what are you feeding them? Because all I can see is that it's green. We were on the other side of the pasture, so I didn't get a chance to go over and ask them what it was. But for dairy breeds, it's like, you can't, I mean, really for any sheep or any livestock, you know, you shouldn't probably go around feeding animals that are not yours or that you don't have. But when it comes to dairy animals specifically, it's like, you can't feed them certain things because it will make their milk taste funny, which is just a really interesting aspect to dairy animals in general, that what they eat can affect how the milk tastes and its composition. Another thing that we learned is that sheep's milk is very creamy. It's naturally homogenized. which means that the fat is more incorporated into the milk. So it's harder to separate, but it does create this kind of, you know, like you can put it into a cup of coffee and it has the same effect as a creamer. Just that it's just that creamy and that that much thicker. So that's really interesting. It is harder to milk them. That was one of the things that I heard, that again, it depends on your genetics. You can breed for, you know, larger teats and larger holes for the milk to come out of. I don't remember the name of that specific part of it. You know, so you can breed to make it easier for you to hand milk if that's what you're planning to do. And that, so that was like utter confirmation with something that I never even considered, but I recently was at a symposium that talked about just how their udders are formed, how they hang, what does a healthy udder look like, which I never would have considered. I would have just been like, well, you know, aren't they all produce milk, so shouldn't it be fine? You know, all we want is the milk, so who cares, you know, what their udders, how perfectly formed their udders are. But the more you look into that, you're like, oh wow, there actually is a lot to how their udders hang. If they hang too low, it can actually cause health problems. Sometimes it means that they won't be as productive for as long, which will cut into your profit if you're going into it for a money aspect. And so it's just, there's a lot of, I think, more physically, you know, you have to keep an eye on certain things. I think for meat sheep, you know, as long as they're stocky and they're above a certain weight, that's a lot of what most people care about, and that they're sturdy and healthy for their area. But for milk, it seems like you have to be a little bit more aware of where things sit, where do their teats place, where is this, you know, and it's a lot more complicated when you think of like, oh wow, okay, you know, how do they stand, how do they, you know, look. I think that's also different if you're going into it for the endangered breeds. For them it's more important that, you know, you just have babies that have these genes in them. And I'm sure you look for other body composition too, but a lot of it is just, we just want these animals to produce and to, you know, increase in number. And yeah, you'll keep, you know, the best ones, but, you know, you might keep some of the other ones just because you want more of that type. Whereas for dairy animals, dairies, they're more likely to be more strict in culling, I would say. I think meat are too. I don't know about wool specifically, but I know that at least for dairies and for meat producers, they're very strict on, this sheep has to be, have to tick all these boxes, or else they get shipped. Just because we're a dairy and we constantly have to be having babies in order to have milk, you know, we just can't keep them all. And I think that's probably true for meat as well. Wool, you know, I think they can be more like pets. As long as they have really nice wool, I think there's less culling involved if you have, you know, that number that you like. And, you know, I guess there's just less breeding involved in wool if that's not what you want to do. I mean, you can correct me if I'm wrong.
Well, and, you know, there's a lot of fiber flocks out there too, where they're not, their purpose is not necessarily breeding and breeding stock. It's just, so they might just have wethers and ewes and not be worried about breeding and just be focused on the, you know, getting the wool every year. So.
Mm-hmm. And for like wool, there's that, what's the term? It'll come back every year. There's not really something you need to do to it. You know, whereas with milk, you need to have babies. Mm-hmm. The ewes will dry out.
How many months do they stay in milk if you are milking them?
So I believe they said 200 to 300 days lactation.
Okay.
So that's, I mean, people say that they've had babies in February and are still milking up until they dry them off in like September.
Okay.
Because, and I don't know if this is just a generic sheep or this is just dairy sheep, but they're easier to breed. They kind of get into their hot spot in October, November, kind of when the days start to cool down. And so you kind of try to dry them off a month or two before. But again, that's preference. You can also dry them up and then get them bred as soon as you want, you know, as soon as you are able to. But yeah, they basically have a very long lactation period, and they do give about half a gallon to a gallon of milk per ewe a day. So that's two milkings, which if you've ever done cow, you're like, oh, that's not a ton. But you also have to realize, yeah, but these animals are a lot smaller. And that's for a dairy breed. You can get half a gallon to a gallon. I think some people can even get a gallon and a half from like a really good ewe. Mm-hmm. But in the long run, that's probably as much as you would ever need, depending on how large your family is and you're not, you know, planning to sell them.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, especially if you're getting into homesteading and you want to provide that milk for your family, you hear so much about, you know, a lot of people do Jersey cows or they'll do goats. But I mean, that sounds pretty amazing to have a sheep, especially for us who enjoy fiber, that you could, you know, get a dairy sheep and provide that much milk for your family. That's pretty amazing.
Well, and if you're hands-on with your wool sheep, you can still milk them. You may not get as much out of them. What I'm planning to do this year, and I can't remember what the term is, but there's a way to milk.
Milk share?
Yeah, the milk share. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah.
Where you milk them. Let's see if I can think this. So you take the babies away at night and then you reunite them in the morning, but you milk them. So let's say it's the beginning of the day. The ewes are in a different area. The lambs are in another area. You bring the mom into the milking parlor, you milk them, and then when they're done, you take them out to the pasture and you reunite them with the lambs. And then they're with the lamb all day long. So they still get their mom's milk. They get everything they need from mom. And then at night, you bring them through and you take the lambs away, you milk the mom. She won't have as probably much as in the morning because the lamb's been on her all day. But you milk as much as you can out of her, and then they go into their separate areas, and then the lambs go in theirs, and then you repeat the process.
That's really cool, because I have heard of calf sharing. So, you know, with people that, again, are on a homestead and they will calf share, so do the same thing. And I was wondering if you could do that with a sheep or not.
Yes, so you can. Some people will wait, you know, once the babies are born, the lambs. Some people will wait, you know, 2 or 3 weeks to kind of implement that process. Because as with most, you know, like human babies, but as well as any babies, they have to feed more, you know, smaller amounts more often early on. So depending on, you know, how quickly you want to, you know, get your milk, you can milk them, you know, start that process within a week. Some people wait 2 or 3 weeks. It's kind of a preference. The other thing is that some dairies will immediately pull the lambs off and bottle feed them and not put them back on mom. And that is because, like I said, liquid gold, that the milk from the ewe is so precious, especially if it's a business, that they need every drop. And so they'll bottle feed the babies and milk mom basically from the get-go. And I was kind of fluctuating between what I wanted to do. And in the long run, that whole milk share made more sense for us, because then we wouldn't have to buy milk replacer. Milk replacer is the powder that you mix with water that you feed the lambs. You could feed them sometimes for bummer lambs. And it was just one of those, well, you could spend, you know, 100 plus on a huge bag of milk replacer and try to feed all these babies and, you know, pull as much milk out of the moms, which might be more than we need in this season, or just let them share. And I was like, okay, I think we're at the point, we're not at the point where we'd overproducing, because we don't know, this is our first year. So it could be, you know, after this year, we realize 4 ewes that are dairy ewes that are producing a lot are way more than we need. And then maybe we would, you know, then we can probably keep the milk share together. But if for some reason we're like, you know what, we're actually not getting as much as we want or as much as we need to be able to sell it to other people, then that is something to consider. One of the biggest issues that I'm facing with dairy sheep specifically, but really dairy at all in Tennessee, is that you cannot sell raw milk from your farm at all. You can do the milk share, which, or a herd share, which means that someone else owns part of your herd. Mm-hmm. Then so basically you're taking care of their sheep. And so when they come and pick up your milk, It's really their milk. You're just doing all the work, which, you know, as a sheep farmer, I have a love-hate relationship with that. I love the fact that there is a place and a way to sell our milk if we need to, you know, because there are a lot of states that won't sell raw milk at all in any form. But I also don't love the idea of someone else owning my flock. You know, that one kind of, while, you know, the people we know who are interested in doing something like that, like, they wouldn't think of it like, well, this is our sheep, so I'm just going to take it off your property, because that's not how that works. There is that part of me that just doesn't love the idea of someone owning a part of my flock. I'd rather own it all myself and sell the milk. But because of regulations and state law, we're teetering on the whole, well, we may have to do the herd share for right now. But I even know there's some people in our state government that's trying to shut that down. So there's no way to get raw milk at all, which I think is just a real shame, because, I mean, how easy is it for you to go out and grab fast food?
Right.
You know, food that's really horrible for you, but then milk from a, you know, natural milk from an animal, they make it nearly impossible to get. And it's so much healthier for you. So,
absolutely.
So that's definitely something I think that kind of threw me back, kind of getting into dairy sheep, was just how restrictive it is versus the wool and the meat. There's a lot more, I think, misconceptions about raw milk.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems like it's a preference for most people, but there is a lot more controversy over raw milk versus pasteurized milk within just individuals, but also within the state and each state. So,
yeah. And I think it's so silly, because especially in somebody in your situation who has allergies, and this is your only source, like, that your body can handle of dairy, you know, why not give more people access to that, easier access to that? And that, yeah, that's a whole topic we could dive
into. That's a whole topic, but it's just, it is one of those things where we are fortunate to have the land where we can have our dairy sheep.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if I was in a situation where I was in an apartment, you know, I wouldn't be able to do that.
Right. So
that's a whole part of my food source that I wouldn't have access to. And that, yeah, so it's really interesting kind of once you get into dairy sheep and kind of like, oh, it opened up my eyes a lot in a lot of ways to how restrictive some of our food practices are.
Mm-hmm. And now once you, like, your plan to start making sheep ice cream, I'm assuming that is a pasteurized process. Am I right with that or not?
So in order to start a dairy, it will take like $100,000 to start it up in a state like grade A, like, I guess, perfect way, which is a lot for a startup, right? Like, when you're trying to do something where you're testing it out, you're trying to figure out pricing and all that stuff, you know, $100,000 in an investment is a lot.
Yeah.
And so that's one of those things about restrictions and stuff that's hard too, is that in order to, like, sell milk that is pasteurized, you have to have a room, a building specifically for milking. You have to have a separate room specifically for milk storage and cleaning your pumps and stuff. Then you have to have, if you want to do creamery or any sort of cheese or, like, we want to do ice cream, you have to have a whole other separate room or building to process that. And then there's laws on how you're supposed to transfer the milk between rooms. And so it's just very much like, wow, once you get in, like, when I went to our state and I asked for all the information, I mean, I got, you know, hundreds of pages worth of rules, which is just daunting. And then you think, and then you research how much all the machines cost. You know, some machines, even just the ones that the sheep will stand in for you to milk, are, you know, $10,000. So, you know, it's a lot. And so that's why the herd share, it's like, that's really nice, because it does allow someone for me to be able to sell milk, or, you know, to give away milk, you know, however the term is for herd shares, you know, because if it wasn't for that, we'd have a lot of milk that we couldn't give to people, because there's so many rules and it's not a technically grade A facility, even though, you know, we're going to do it as cleanly as we possibly can. you know, because it's not certified or whatever, it means that the milk is dirty, which is not, you know, not true. But yeah, I mean, even just a pasteurization machine is a couple thousand dollars to get a good one and to get one that's big enough for the amount of milk. You can home pasteurize, and I've done that before. But because it's at home, you'd have to have like a fancy facility, like get it done. You can't transport milk. There's a whole ton of rules on how to transport milk. So even if there was a facility nearby I could use, I'd still need to like buy a truck, buy a certain like refrigerator that can transport. Like, it's, milk itself is extremely hard. And that's why when you look at the numbers of people going into dairies, dairy specifically, but even sheep milk, it's like, it's extremely low number versus people going in for meat or wool, because there's less restrictions there. And so that's why if you're like, oh, I've never heard of anyone milking sheep. And it's like, yeah, it's because there's a lot that goes into it. I mean, even goat dairies, you know, they still have to go with all those regulations too. So if you know of a goat dairy that is grade A, I mean, they put a lot of work into it and a lot of startup into their facilities. So, and I just don't think that's necessarily the case for wool or meat. You know, for meat, it's a lot of you grow the animal out and then you send it somewhere and they do the processing. Same with wool, but even wool, there's less restrictions on because, you know, no one's ingesting it. You know, it's like a difference between, you know, whether you're internally using it or you're using it on your exterior. So anyway, so yeah, there's a lot that goes into just even the startup and, you know, pasteurizing and all those rules, and it's a lot harder.
And have you trained your sheep? Like, have you started trained them, but have you started working with them? Kind of, do you have like a stanchion that you're going to put them in to milk them?
Yeah. So that's one of the things I will say is we did not start training them early enough. Basically, it's like, as soon as they come out of the mom, start training them. And we didn't, they were probably 7 to 8 months before we even got a stand, and they are a lot harder to train. At first I thought, well, they could just hop up, you know, for goats, that's the case. They love to jump and get on things. And so, we got a milking stand, and I was like, come on, sheep, you can just hop up. Well, two of them did. The other two, like, I scarred them.
Oh no.
They were like, no, thank you. I kept trying to like lift them up and be like, come on, it's okay. It's not that big a deal. And they were like, no way. And then I tried to build a ramp out of some wood, but the wood itself was really slippery. Cause I mean, if you think about it, hooves, they don't have a lot of traction. And so I built a ramp that was slippery and a few of the ewes fell off, and they were like, no, that made me like it even less. And then I bought like, or I didn't buy, but we had some like house mats laying around. So I put the house mats on them, and they finally were more okay. And so I was trying to train them outside. They seem to do better outside. I'm trying to get them actually into our milking parlor, which is our room. And they're even less wanting to come into the room. So I was like, wow. I was like, okay, if we end up keeping any of the lambs this year, I'm like, I need to get them on there like ASAP. I think it's just, you know, two of them were like so food motivated that they don't care. They didn't care if they slipped. They're like, whatever. Is there food up there? Okay, I'll go. And then I have two other ones that are like, oh, there's food? Well, I'd rather you bring it to me. I'm not going to go. I've been scarred enough. Yeah. Not going up there. So I'm slowly trying to work them into being more comfortable. I got one of them to actually like going on it outside. But as soon as I moved it inside where they have to go through like two doors, or not two doors, but like the door frame, it started to scare her a little bit. So it's definitely a lot of work to get them stand trained, but I feel like that's more my fault than theirs. We should have started a lot sooner.
All a learning process.
It so is. And we haven't even milked yet. The milking themselves, or milking like with your hands and stuff, that's going to be whole other ball of wax that I gotta figure out.
So will you be doing it all by hand without like, because I know there's portable machines too.
Yeah, so one of the things is that I have a 2.5-year-old and a 3-month-old now. So I've got two little kids. And one of the things that I read, or that someone who done this for a few years told me, is that the reason I wanted to do a pump was I thought it would cut down the time. But someone was like, well, but you realize you have to clean like every little thing within your machine before you can use it again. So like you'd probably have to clean it twice a day because you milk twice a day. And they're like, you know, and that's like sterilizing clean, not just spraying it down. You have to sterilize it. And if you've ever, you know, had a baby and worked with bottles and pumps and stuff like that, you realize how many nooks and crannies that milk can get into.
Oh, yes.
And so like the idea of like, oh my gosh, so hand milking, you sit there for 20 minutes, you hand milk them out, and then there's no machines you have to clean. That's it. And then you realize, okay, but if you do that with the machine, it's still probably going to take, you know, 15 minutes. It might save you a few minutes, but in the long run, then you have to take everything back inside the house and clean everything and sterilize everything and do that twice a day. And these machines aren't light,
right?
Depending on which ones you get, some of them are pretty heavy duty and you need to have like a trolley to carry them around. So I just was like, okay, so what for me is going to be the most time effective, where, you know, my kids are going to be the most patient. And I was like, oh, so milking by hand is what I decided on. We'll see how that works. It could be, you know, after a little bit, I'm just like, nope, this is not going to work for me. But I'm also planning to bring in our like pack and play so I can stick the baby in there. And then, you know, we have a pretty decent backyard that my toddler can play in. So I'm like, I'm hoping that as long as we're outside, it'll be a little less, you know, disruptive for them. Cause I mean, that is a lot of time for mom to be away. Cause it's, you know, probably 15, 20 minutes per you, and we've got four. And it's not like the ewes will wait.
They're
you know, getting full, and they're going to need to be milked, and they're going to be uncomfortable. So it's definitely like, okay, once you start it, you can't really stop. So there's definitely a little bit of finagling with the kids, but I just thought, and this is, you know, my whole logic in my brain, which may not end up being all that logical. I just thought hand milking would save time, and we'll see if that's actually true. I think a machine would work and save time if you were trying to do two at a time. But we have such a small room. We only have one stand. And so I feel like, you know, if it's just milking one, hand's probably fine. If you're trying to milk more than one at one time, then I think a machine would be helpful. And, you know, that might be for next year, is if we, oh, hey, you know what, this took way too much time. So next year, let's buy another stand and buy a milker that can milk two at a time. And then we can get through it so much faster.
Yeah, I think everyone who raises any type of livestock or chickens or anything, you're just slowly growing and you learn things. And so when you try something out and it doesn't work, you figure out a different way and see if that works. So it's all about just learning and growing.
Yeah, and I like to just add that sometimes it could be a brilliant plan, but the sheep and the children say it isn't.
Yeah, they have other plans. Yeah. They have other ideas.
I'm just trying to figure out the layout on where to put everything. I want access to food so I can refill where they're eating if, you know, I'm not done. So I'm like, okay, I got to figure out where that is. I've got some wires on the wall. And if you have sheep or goats, you know that like Murphy's Law is real and they love it. So anything that's wrong, that could go wrong, they will try to figure out a way to do that. And so like I see cords and I'm just like, get them away from the cords. And so like there's so much more involved in trying to figure out how just the layout will work that I didn't even think about beforehand. And now I'm in it and I'm like, oh, I should have thought about this. Okay. Well, okay. Now I got to move everything around because this isn't going to work. So yeah, it's definitely a trial and error. And I think every year is going to be different. Once we, you know, increase our flock, that's going to be different. So that'll change too.
Yeah. Sometimes you have to learn on the job.
Yep.
Well, before we go, I want to know, what is one of the most important things that you have learned in your first year of shepherding? Something that just sticks out that you've learned through doing it.
Yeah, I think I heard this from multiple people, is to have a mentor, to find someone who you can ask. I have a dairy group on Facebook that has saved me headache, has saved me stress. We were talking before this started about our shearing day and how I freaked out about thinking that they were too skinny. And I immediately went on there, and within a few minutes I got people going, it's okay, it's okay. So, you know, just having a group or some one-on-one mentor that you can call if something goes wrong or just for a question, that's one of the ones that stuck with me. For me, for if you're going into dairy specifically, it's get them trained. Because one of the things that I also realized I should have done was halter train them, get them trained on a halter. So they would walk nicely. The sheep we have do not walk with a halter nicely. They wiggle, they throw their bodies all over the place. It's something we're working on too. But it's like, if you're going to handle your sheep, and it could be for wool too, but if you know ahead of time that you are going to handle your sheep all the time, get them used to things like a halter. If you're milking, get them used to a stand, you know, as soon as you possibly can, because it just makes your job a lot harder. It puts more stress on the animal when you're forcing them to do something that they're not comfortable doing. You know, not that you can't train them, because obviously I'm trying, but I think knowing what you're going into it for specifically, and then realizing what you're going to do with them. I mean, I knew I was going to be milking them. I knew I was going to have hands on them every single day. I knew they were going to be on the stand. I guess I just figured I could figure it out, you know, later. And then when it got to later, I was like, oh, oops. So definitely like know what you're going in it for. You know, if you want milk, but you don't want a huge production, you know, you don't need to spend money on a fancy dairy breed, because really, you know, any sheep that has babies will produce milk. So, you know, if you want just, you know, a few cups full to test with, to try, you know, you don't have to go into that, but you definitely are going to have hands on them because you're going to be milking them. So it's definitely like go into it knowing what you want to use it for, and then train them for that specifically, and then get someone who can help you. I've talked to a lot of people. I've parts of multiple groups, even the fiber. You know, I'm not in it for the fiber, but I joined a bunch of groups, a raw fiber group, talked to a bunch of people, teaching me how to gauge if our wool is any good. You know, they talk to me about, you know, strength of the wool, you know, can you pull it? Does it break? There's a difference between, you know, hearing it kind of strain versus it breaking completely. The length of your wool, you know, and how important that is. That's definitely something that I didn't consider ahead of time because I wasn't in it for the wool, but then realizing, well, you're going to have wool though. So you kind of need to figure out what you're going to do with it. If you're going to sell it, you need to know what it's worth. And so that's definitely something that, you know, if you're in it for meat or dairy, you are going to, and you have a wool breed, you are going to have wool. So, you know, even if you're not going to make money or a huge profit on it, you know, still look into it and ask people, and maybe even find a wool mentor just to be like, this is how good your wool is. And this is what it's worth. Because, you know, even if it's just paying your shearer, I mean, that's one of our goals for our wool is just let's have it compensate the cost of shearing them. We're not in it for wool, but hey, there we go. You know, if I can sell the wool and have it pay for the shearing, then, you know, that's great. And then if I could earn, you know, a little bit extra, great. I can put that money towards other things. So, you know, yeah, that's my two cents is train your sheep for what you want them for and know what you want them for, and find someone who can help you.
Yes, I agree. And yeah, mentors are just so invaluable. Definitely a must have.
Another thing people say, which, you know, it depends on your location. If you're really out in the country, this is harder to find, but find a good vet. I mean, that's kind of a mentor too, because our vet has told me a lot of things. But, you know, when it's harder for dairy, people going in it for dairy, because a lot of vets, even if they know a lot about sheep, don't know a ton about dairy sheep specifically. And it is kind of it's a whole other game. So, you know, I'm very grateful for the vet we have. She knows a lot about sheep, but she doesn't know a lot about dairy. So even though she knows a lot, and I'm really glad we have access to her, you know, it's not to say that there's not someone else out there that will know more about your breed specifically, your wool or your meat specifically. So I'm just someone of those people who's just, don't be afraid to ask questions. I never feel dumb asking questions. I always feel like, you know what? I'm trying. And I'd rather ask a question and then have a dead sheep.
Oh, absolutely. Yes. So,
you know, don't feel like, and I've also found that this whole community of shepherds, whether it's for meat or wool or milk, are so open to talking. We love our sheep. I mean, we wouldn't do it if we didn't. And the sharing of that knowledge, it's just a different, it's a different group of people I find than like even people in it for cows and stuff. Because we're just such a small number, we love to share our information and our knowledge with what little we have of it. You know, even just us doing it for a year, you know, I have a lot more than someone who doesn't have sheep at all. So, you know, we're always willing to share. And I find that's specifically for this, for sheep communities, that they just love to help. So don't be afraid to ask questions, even asking someone to be your mentor. You know, I find that there's a lot of people out there who are like, yes, I'll help. You know, I may not know everything, but I will, you know, help. I haven't met anyone who's been really rude or mean. So don't be afraid to reach out to people. And you know, be honest. If you admire them, tell them. You're like, I really admire what you're doing. You know, can you, you know, answer a few of my questions? I mean, who doesn't love to hear that? Especially,
yes, right.
You know, if you're working your butt off,
right?
You know, you love what you do. Having someone come up to you and go, you know what? I love what you're doing. Can I ask you a question? I'm like, who can look at that and go, no, go away.
Right.
You know, if you're really into it and you love it, I mean, someone going up to you like that, it's just like, yeah, sure. I'd love to, you know, answer your question. So yeah.
Yes, definitely. Well, Delaney, would you like to share where people can find you on social media?
Yes. So I'm most active on my Instagram, which is You and Me Creamery. And that's EWE for you and Me Creamery. And then on Facebook, it's You and Me Homestead. I am currently working on a website specifically for our milk and stuff like that. So that will be coming out soon, but I don't have it up yet. And so if you're interested in any of that, you can follow me on either. But like I said, I'm mostly there on Instagram. If you want to, you can contact me either in any way. I'm on both of them pretty frequently, but Instagram is the one that I find is the easiest for me to connect with people. So those two, and then a website coming soon. And I'll be updating about the website on the Instagram and the Facebook.
Oh, perfect. Well, thank you so much, Delaney. I think what you're doing is so amazing. And the whole dairy sheep side of things is something I find so fascinating. And I think it's great that you're jumping into it. And I can't wait to see you when you get your first cup of milk. You have to definitely document that.
Oh, there will be pictures and hopefully no tears. Crying over spilt milk, I'm sure, is going to be something that's going to happen. That day will happen, and I'm sure I will share that too. But same with you. I mean, I love the podcast. I love seeing you and seeing your growth and where you're seeing the sheep you're getting in a little bit. So it'll be fun. Tears is definitely going to be a good one.
Delaney is such a joy to talk to, and I will definitely be following along on her social media to see that first cup full of sheep's milk that she gets. And if shipping sheep's milk ice cream is in her future plans, sign me up, please. Well, I hope you enjoyed this week's episode, and until next time, take care and keep creating with fiber.